and welcome to the Giving Voice to Depression podcast. I'm Terry, the creator and co-host of this podcast. I've lived with depression most of my life, and I know how easy it can be to feel all alone in the experience. I'm not alone, and you aren't either.
And I'm Dr. Anita Sands, a licensed clinical psychologist with a number of my own diagnoses, all of which bring a certain amount of anxiety and depression along with them. There is great power in shared experiences. We share our own as we engage in intimate and candid conversations with our weekly guests, exploring different perspectives on and experiences with depression.
We keep it real because depression is real. We keep it hopeful because there truly is hope in spite of what depression tells you. We would like to acknowledge our new partnership with Recovery.com. Recovery.com provides resources and information for individuals seeking treatment for mental health or addiction issues. It offers a fact-checked and vetted online platform of treatment centers to help individuals find the right path to recovery. This episode is sponsored by the AB Corcor Foundation for Mental Health.
While Terry and I research and record interviews for new episodes in the coming weeks, please enjoy this powerful episode from our archive.
This episode is from our earlier years when I co-hosted with my sister Bridget.
Hi, Terry.
Hello, Bridget.
Today we're doing part two of a two-part series, and I just want to review a little bit of last week because it was such an amazing opportunity to hear both sides of a life-saving story. Mm-hmm. And we had Neil and Johnny, and they're both in England. And at the last episode, Johnny had decided that he was going to join Neil and go to a cafe and warm up and not jump off of a bridge right now. And in that comfort that they had found in each other and in that much better feeling place that they had established, all of a sudden the police enter. It's all chaotic and fast. And Johnny's taken away to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And Neil went to work.
And then we pick it up in part two. We start this episode with a question that I've often wondered about, but never had the opportunity or permission to ask. As you can tell, I was a little nervous about it.
Were you, I don't know how to ask it.
No, it's okay.
I can't even come up with a word, were you like regretful that he had changed your mind after you ended back up in that situation that you found so unacceptable?
No, it's a really good question. I think initially, because it was distressing, the way that, not to blame the police, but really felt very angry for a few hours. I was like, actually things have got worse. Eventually I was taken back to the hospital that I ran away from, but I felt different. I felt, I think I had some hope. I think just from talking to this guy, I had some hope that there was some light out there. The hospital hadn't changed. Everyone around me was still really unwell and that hadn't changed, but something in me had changed.
But because this is a real story of a real human's mental health crisis, that change wasn't a cure or a quick fix. But it was a turning point.
I'm not gonna lie. The incident on the bridge, it changed things for me. It gave me mm-hmm. hope. But it still took, I'm gonna say it took most of my mid twenties to really come to terms with, mm-hmm. My illness and, really get help for it. And the trouble was I didn't want to accept it. I stopped taking my medication, and that was a big mm-hmm. problem. I stopped taking my meds and I became unwell again. In my mid-20s, that's when things changed, and there was actually something that happened, there was an incident that happened that changed everything.
Now, for a podcast created to promote healthy, healing conversations about mental health, Johnny and Neil's story is an embarrassment of riches. Johnny's about to tell us about another conversation, more honest, caring, sharing, that brought him to a new level of recovery and healing. This was when a close friend of his suffered a heart attack.
I went to see him and we sat down and we talked for ages. He talked to me about, everything he'd gone through. He sat there and he talked to me with this honesty and this frankness and this openness. And I said to myself, why can't I do this? Why can he talk so confidently and openly and not be embarrassed. And it really bothered me. It really bothered me that he could and I couldn't. And so, so what I did is I made a little video on my phone. I made a video and I put it on YouTube, under a different name. It was amazing. I put it out there and I got all these comments from people. Basically, I realized I'm not alone. And I think that was a big thing for me, you know, talking and accepting and actually, you know, I actually asked for help and said, I do need therapy and, you know, engaging with therapy and, you know, eventually taking meds as well. I think I finally got back on track. And when I really got back on track, that's when I decided to launch the campaign to find this guy.
It was 6 years later and a distant memory from that day. And completely by surprise, my fiance calls me up because she was one of the only people that I spoke to about that conversation. And she was like, oh, my God, Neil, I think the guy that you spoke to on the bridge all those years ago is looking for you. So I was like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And so there was a campaign out. And I had absolutely no idea that this campaign was, like, viral, like, on Twitter, on Facebook, on social media. It was trending around the world, but I hadn't seen it. It was called the Find Mike campaign, so it was hashtag Find Mike. So he thought my name was Mike, which wasn't, obviously, the best start to the campaign. But I don't think that would have made a difference if he'd called it Find Neil, because I never spoke to anybody about the conversation, really, so nobody, apart from my family, would have been able to, you know, connect the dots.
But an amazing thing happened. A number of other people did connect the dots in a way that sort of connects us all.
Actually, quite a few people came forward in the Find My campaign who genuinely thought it was them.
38 people came forward saying, I think I might have been the one that helped you on the bridge, which was incredible. You know, we just thought that one person, this one stranger that helped me would come forwards, but 38 people.
So 38 other men had helped a stranger who was also a male on that bridge and had never acknowledged it. Wow.
Yeah.
And then there would be women involved in some of the others, you'd hope. So that's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing? I still can't believe it to this day. You know, just we call them all these silent heroes. They're these silent heroes like Neil that, you know, helped someone in distress and then just went on their way. And I just think that's amazing. So heartwarming.
And we know through that campaign that a lot of people in London have stopped somebody jumping off a bridge and then gone about their day and just got on with it. It was just interesting that I got to know how my story ended.
You know, just what he did that day was just extraordinary. And not just for me, but my family as well, actually. My family and my friends, you know, they also had a huge debt to pay this man.
And now all of us, by the way, you know, everyone you're helping,
Yeah, oh, thank you.
And the impact on my life from that conversation has also been, I would say, as equally profound as Johnny has found it as well. So now we're on this journey together, a journey that's led me to this podcast, Giving Voice to Depression, because that's what I do. I feel so passionately about it now, and I've met so many people who have struggled and don't need to struggle, because half the battle is being able to be open and talk. But unfortunately, there's so much stigma. People take their lives. So we're just trying to do our part to, you know, to stop that happening.
Given the fact that you had never before had a conversation about mental health and certainly were not trained to do so, what enabled you or inspired you to stop and put yourself in that position to help Johnny?
Because I've thought about it a lot, and I think I had a lot of positive role models in my life. And even though we didn't talk about mental health growing up, I was very much encouraged to just kind of do what felt right, regardless of what people thought. You know, we've all got somewhere to be, and we're all trading off a sacrifice, aren't we? Like, you know, if I help this person, I'm going to be late, or I'm going to, you know, lose a bit more money or something like that. But it feels nice. Sometimes it's just nice just to make a sacrifice. I don't know. It's a nice feeling, and I think we should do it more often. I try to. But when somebody is in a real crisis point that they might actually do something dangerous, you don't have to get involved. You don't have to walk up to them, but you can do something. You know, you can call the police, or, you know, you can hang around and make sure they're safe, or you could ask somebody else to come and, you know, help you go and speak to them. You know, you don't have to tackle it alone. So there's always something you can do.
Don't kind of expect anyone to stop, because it's a big city, and you know, you see people all the time that are unfortunately, you know, maybe unwell or who are in crisis, mm-hmm. and you know, people sort of become immune to it. Sadly, mm-hmm. I was incredibly lucky to find, in the middle of London, you know, on this bridge, this incredibly compassionate and kind mm-hmm. and patient stranger.
You know, just sharing your troubles and your vulnerabilities with somebody can be so profound in just knowing that you're not alone and you're not the only person out there going through this. Because I think so many people think that they, you know, whatever they're experiencing, it's their own problem. Nobody else could be thinking what they're thinking. And that's just not the case.
I'm so glad you made yourself a friend that day, and that he's around to enjoy your good heart, and that he was able to recover.
Well, me too, because now he's like my best friend, and, you know, I know his family really well, and he knows my family. He'll be babysitting my children, you know what I mean?
Oh, I just love it. I just love it. Thank you so much for sharing your story.
Neil and Johnny now work together as mental health and hope advocates, truly making a difference in the world. Mm-hmm. And it all started when one human heard another human's cry for help and answered.
Mm. It really, it is an astonishingly touching story. There are times I get shivers, there are times I want to cry, there are times I'm so proud of humans. I mean, it really impacted me. There are so many amazing lessons in Neil and Johnny's story that it's hard to end these episodes, but there was one more thing I wanted to share before signing off. It's just the concept of a hero and whether or not you save someone's life. And I presented the question to Johnny.
Yeah, I think people save their own lives. I mean, if people, they do, they, you know, take such courage to, do you know, I'm saying that because Neil says that about that whole situation. He says, you know, Johnny, you did it yourself. And, you know, so now I
have get it.
Kind of, yeah, you know, like, because it does, I could have easily, it kind of was for me, I could have easily just taken that step forwards and into the river, you know, but I guess, no, it was something in me, it was some courage and determination in me, you know, clicked into place, and I said, no, I'm going to give it another chance. And it's only you can do that yourself. So, yeah, people save themselves, but I think, you know, you give them hope. You know, you give them hope, and, you know, I think that's it. We always talk about hope, myself and Neil. We talk about hope, and hope is so underestimated. The hope that you can give people really is underestimated, I think.
Wow, hope is so underestimated.
Isn't it beautiful? Yeah, maybe we don't even go into it trying to save someone if we're in that situation. Maybe we go into it just genuinely trying to give them some hope. And then, you know, as he said, the choice at that point is theirs. Well, thank you to both Johnny and Neil for sharing their incredible story with us. And they're just starting to come to the U.S. and tell it. In fact, they were in New York this week, and that's the first time they've been here. So hopefully we will help them find an audience for their story here.
This interview was originally conducted with a grant from the Charles E. Kubley Foundation.
We truly hope that our podcast brings a little more understanding, helps you better articulate and reflect on your own experience with depression, or better understand how to support someone else who is struggling.
If this episode has been of comfort or value to you, know that there are hundreds of others like it in our archive, which you can easily find at our website, givingvoicetodepression.com. And remember, if you're struggling, speak up, even if it's hard. If someone else is struggling, take the time to listen.